This podcast is presented in part by Home Loans Assist, personalized credit restoration to help you reach your financial goals. Don't let the name fool you. Home Loans Assist works with all aspects of your credit to increase your credit scores for whatever you want to achieve, whether it's buying a home, car, or just for peace of mind. Visit #relationshipgoals.com/credit to sign up for a free consultation and to get a special offer of $100 off your enrollment fee. Welcome to Relationship Goals. I'm Danita Walton. My guest today is Allison Blackman, an author, writer, online influencer, and relationship expert. She is the publisher and editor-in-chief of AdviceSisters.com, a beauty, fashion, and lifestyle website, and LeatherAndLaceAdvice.com, an intimacy advice website. Allison is widely credited with bringing the advice genre online. She offers her readers a unique perspective about the things that make life easier, more successful, and more satisfying. AdviceSisters.com features advice on beauty, fashion, lifestyles, relationships, and things that help make life easier, more successful, and more fun. LeatherAndLaceAdvice.com features advice focusing on love, dating, general relationships, and intimacy. Allison is the author of books, including The Everything Dating Book, second edition, Recruiting Love, Using the Business Skills You Have to Find the Love You Want, Feel Great, Be Great While You Date, and 4 ebooks on social behavior, singles and dating, and wedding dilemmas. She's currently working on a new book about the lives of rock and roll roadies.
Well, thank you so much, Allison. I really appreciate you being here with me tonight. So first and foremost, I'd love for you to introduce yourself to our listeners.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Well, basically, I'm the author of 8 self-help books. Most of them were about dating and relationships. And I've been online providing advice since 1995. I'm also the author of 3 websites. And the one that is probably most interesting to you, well, actually 2 of them. One is AdviceSisters.com, which I started with my twin sister, and AdviceSisters.com is credited with bringing the advice genre online. But my twin sister passed away, and now AdviceSisters.com still gives advice, but on a wider variety of topics. LeatherAndLaceAdvice.com, however, is my new dating and relationship and general advice website that I do with a man, Anthony Sabatini, because men and women have very different views on how to solve problems and how they see them. So we do a his and hers Q&A. If a reader writes in, they'll get, you know, the other side's playbook. I've also been consulting and providing advice to other publications and people all around the world. So that's pretty
awesome.
Much it.
That's amazing. So, you know, since the mid-90s, you've been doing this, and so you've seen the huge transition of online advice going online in the first place and off of newspapers. So how would you say that the Internet has impacted the online advice world?
Well, there's no question that the Internet and apps like Swoon and, you know, things like that, and, of course, online dating sites have impacted everybody's social life tremendously. But I think in the long run, you have to get off the Internet or Tinder or Swoon or any of these dating apps and get out and talk to people in real life. So when it comes down to really making a connection, it's the same as it's been since time immemorial, basically. You meet somebody, there's chemistry or there isn't. What the online, you know, advice genre has done is make advice accessible, and also it makes new partners accessible. The downside, as I see it, is that you don't really know who someone is online, and you know, you can invent yourselves. And there are lots of people in my field who think all it takes to be an advisor is that you want to give opinions. People are very different, and I'm always very aware that I've worked with people in different age groups, different cultures, with different mm-hmm. values all over the world. So what is important to me, what I think makes sense, may not be important to them. And, you know, when you go online, you have to be really, really careful about not only who you choose as an advisor, which I'm sure you'd agree with, but also
Absolutely.
If you're dating, you have to really look at what people say and not what they look like or what they claim. You've got to check them out.
So in terms of like checking out online advisors, how would you say that someone online that you may never meet, that you only have conversations with, how do you think that, you know, someone like yourself or any other coach could actually help people resolve their issues?
Well, first of all, I've been doing it for decades. So I have experience with people of various sorts. I've never had a complaint. And, of course, I'm an author of a lot of self-help books, too. I am not a doctor. I repeat, I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist. You know, my experience comes from being and doing and being able to see things a little differently than a lot of people. And while I've helped them, I have a disclaimer on my site saying this is not a substitution for mental health professionals. I think what my role is to get people unstuck, because most people feel like they're hopeless, that they'll never find someone or they've got a problem, whatever their relationship issue is. And the truth of the matter is sometimes most people know how to fix a problem. They just need a little bit of inspiration and information and motivation in the right direction. And that's what I can give them. I'm not going to solve a serious mental health problem for someone.
So that I'm laughing because I wholeheartedly agree. People know what the answer is. They don't necessarily want to.
Right.
They're not ready to take action on it. So
but here's
nice
the
have
thing.
Advice to fall back on.
Again, to answer your question just a little more quickly, anybody can put up a website these days. That's what makes the Internet so compelling. If you're a consumer of advice or you're looking for a dating site or whatever it is, you really have to investigate them. Get recommendations. How long have they been in business? Have they written any books? Do they have anything to show other than they're a smart mouth? You can tell that pretty quickly, not so much from what a website looks like, but from what's on it. You know,
how can you
like
tell if someone's credible? Is it just doing that research?
Well, I think that's how you can tell anybody's credible, and of course the net can help you do that. In my case, again, I'm not a doctor, but I've written many books on the subject that have been published, and I've been giving advice for years and years all over the world, and people can look it up if they like what they see, if they can see I write intelligently and that I make sense and that I can give them something to think about, then that's the way you look at it. If someone says things, you know, I write about beauty too, and it never ceases to amaze me when, not me, but other people who are writing online say, don't buy this product, it smells bad, or my friend got a rash from it. This is not responsible reporting. You are not the person. You can't know who's on the other side of the computer screen. So you have to feel someone out carefully, and you have to be diplomatic. And you have to remember that your advice, no matter how good you think it is, may not be the right advice for this person. You can never tell them what to do. I'm sure you'd agree with this, too. You can only make suggestions and let them come to a conclusion on their own.
That's something I struggle with sometimes, not going to lie, but learning that more and more every day.
Well, I've been doing it so long that I realize that it's, you know, you have to understand that there's a difference between the advice or counseling you give a friend and someone you don't know who could be impacted forever by it. And it's an awesome responsibility. It sounds easy to give advice, but it isn't, because we all have our own beliefs and feelings that stem from our own experiences and our own background in education. So to be a good advisor, you have to, you know, be general.
All of this totally sounds like being in a relationship with someone.
Well,
and I know that you know from serious experience on how to, you know, be with someone and see their perspective. And
well, I think one of the problems that people have is they're not, nobody's perfect. And they want their partner to be perfect or their date to be perfect. And when they aren't, they forget that everyone has assets and liabilities. And to be successful in dating and finding a partner, you have to be critical of yourself. You have to know, and what you think your own assets and liabilities are may not be evident to someone else. So, for instance, a very pretty girl who knows she can strut her stuff may actually intimidate a man who'd like to date her, you know, because she feels unapproachable, you know. So
how would that pretty girl find a love that lasts, would you say?
Well, I mean, first of all, I have what I call my three must-haves and my three non-negotiables. Again, I'm not saying that you should be so picky in the extreme that nobody can meet your demands, but for instance, there are certain things that will make or break a relationship right up front. Like, for example, if you absolutely want a child and your biological clock is ticking and you meet some nice guy who makes it clear right away he doesn't want children, there's no point in dating him. People fall in love and they fight about things they can't resolve. And when you find someone who seems to embody most of the things you desire and a few of the things you don't, life gets a lot easier. To find those people is an art form. You are obviously schooled in this art form, as I believe I am. I'm not a matchmaker. But I believe that the first thing you have to do, the first thing I would say is this, that dating is work. It isn't entertainment. It isn't fun. The fun comes after you've met somebody and you're holding hands and sharing a picnic and a bottle of wine. The dating part is usually pretty gruesome because there's a lot of disappointment. And the key is to find the one person who wants you that you want back just as much. And that seems almost impossible, but people do it every minute of every day. You know, you have to keep a perspective. You have to know what you want the most and what you can't live without and what you absolutely can. So if you ask somebody, well, what are you looking for? The first thing they'll probably say, particularly if they're a younger woman, is, oh, he has to have a really good job. He's got to have a hot car. He's got to, like, be good looking. You know, he has to make me laugh. Well, those are all wonderful things. But in the long run, there are things that are much more important to a relationship. Like, does this person see things the way you do? Or are you going to be fighting about things like religion or children or where to live? Or, you know, if Sarah Jessica Parker wanted to met a gorgeous guy who said he wanted to be, you know, stuck in a small town in the country, or, you know, she probably wouldn't have fared very well. So you have to know what you want. Then, that said, you have to be realistic. In other words, when you're younger, you might not really know what you want. It takes some experience, sometimes a few broken hearts. By the time you're in your 30s, 40s, or beyond, your perspective changes. There's a period where no one's good enough for you because you've waited so long, and Prince Charming's going to come, and you're sure of it. And if that time passes, then you start looking. If you're smart and you want to be with someone, you have to adjust yourself. And I know many of older people who have been able to make love relationships later because they no longer felt they were holding out for the man who was going to be the one, because there are many the ones. It just depends on what shape and form they're in.
So once you find this hypothetical, not the one, but your version of the one, how do you make it last? Is it the compromising or, you know?
Well, hopefully you found the person with whom you could be compatible in the first place. So, you know, this will not be such an issue. But occasionally I do weddings. I'm an ordained minister, believe it or not. And I've done a few weddings, and I always add what I call my 12 tips for lasting love, or at least a few of them. And I think the most important part in keeping a relationship strong is your desire to want to be in it. In other words, to not give up when the going gets tough, because your relationship is worth more than anything else. And if you're with somebody a long time, and I've been married to my husband 25 years and counting, you know, after that some of the romance wears off. But if you don't spend time together and you isolate, then, you know, things are difficult. And I have more of these tips. I don't know if you want to hear them. But
I love that, the desire to want to be in it.
That's number one. I mean, how many people get divorced within 6 months or a year, or, you know, because it's hard. And the same thing with dating someone. When they start to do something you don't like, if it's a big red flag, that's one thing. If you just have a tiff, you don't walk away. That's not what couples are supposed to do. We're a disposable society, and relationships with human beings should not be disposable. You leave when you've tried and you failed. So, I mean, I tell you, I think one of the things that's really tough on younger people, well, everybody, but particularly younger men and women, is that other people influence them. So in other words, they meet somebody they really like, and their best friend goes, oh, he's cruddy, he's a loser. Or her mother says, you know, I don't like him. Or when are you going to give me grandchildren? You know, she's not ready for any of that. I mean, I actually know one story. It's a true one. I did a wedding, and the mother of the bride came up to the bride just moments after she had walked down the aisle and said, "When are you going to give me grandchildren?" I mean, you know, that's a huge amount of pressure to do that.
She didn't have a tan line on her ring finger yet.
That's exactly right. And I guess the bottom line of this is to remember not to let others guilt you into having the relationship they think you should have. Because when you're in a relationship, you're two people in an exclusive pairing, and you don't have to make your relationship conform to anyone else's idea of what it should be. As long as it works for the two of you, that's really all that matters. But there will be a lot. I always say it's the outside influences that break people up, whether they're married or just dating. Which brings me to tip number three, which is respect your differences, because you belong with each other, not to each other. And you're not going to agree on everything all the time. And so whether it's a relationship or it's a marriage, whatever it is, you just have to learn to forgive. I mean, if your partner or boyfriend tells you something you didn't want to hear, cut them some slack for being honest and be respectful of all that they are, not just the one thing that upset you, because that's how relationships fail. Which also brings me to tip number four, which is some disagreements really can't be resolved by compromise. Like, he wants to live in the city and she wants to live on a ranch. Or, you know, he wants five dogs and she's allergic. You can't have it both ways. And the best way to make a decision whether you're dating or in a relationship is to ask which one of us is impacted more by the decision. So whenever possible, each person will get the one thing most important to them. The other things are negotiable. I mean, whether you're, you know, talking about restaurants or moving in together, and neither of you wants to move, or perhaps only one of you could legitimately break a lease, or neither can, but it's going to cost a lot more for one to move than the other. So it's the one who has the biggest impact that has to deal with the biggest compromise. So I think those are the big ones. That said, when you're dating someone, and I know this is about dating, but again, all of these are really important for relationships that are moving somewhere or that have been around for a while. I say the most important thing is to be kind to someone. I mean, we've kind of forgotten. We type in 144 characters, you know, on Twitter, and we're used to being very quick with what we say. We've forgotten the art of the small gestures. You know, it's not the expensive gift that you get or give. It's the way you give something small. If somebody gives you a big piece of jewelry and then you have a horrendous fight, that jewelry doesn't sparkle for you. The little gestures are the things that count. Showing someone that you appreciate them, keeping your eyes on them when you're dating, staying away from your cell phone during a date or at dinner. You can manage it for an hour. You won't die. So
I'm going to take it back a little bit, all the way back to the dating. What would you think that when people are looking for this person that they can compromise with and appreciate the differences, what would you say is the biggest mistake they make when looking for that person, when looking for that love?
Oh, that's a very good question, and I have an answer. Most people, when they're looking for someone, when they're ready to find someone, do what I call bulk dating. In other words, anyone who asks them, they say yes to, by and large. If you do that, you will wear yourself so thin that you will want to stay in your house with taken out and never move out. I think that people need to date smart. You know, it's easier said than done, but again, it has to do with knowing your own assets and liabilities and knowing what you're looking for, because I'll tell you another quick story. I had a friend who wanted to meet an Italian businessman. Sounds pretty easy. There's lots of... And where did she go every night? To a roadside bar in the middle of nowhere in Staten Island, where they did sort of, you know, denim and diamonds dancing. And I said, you know, you might meet someone there, but it is unlikely you're going to meet a high-powered Italian executive. The law of average, go where the people are that you want to meet. By the way, she never did meet who she wanted. I think she married a truck driver or something like that and is now divorced. But
Oh.
But the point is, if you want to meet someone who is into what you're into, there are good ways to do it that don't require artificial dating. For instance, volunteer for something. You know, if you like hiking, join the Sierra Club and take hikes or biking tours, or help someone less fortunate. You know, join an organization like the ASPCA that works with animals, or In God's Love We Deliver that, you know, has their charity. Pick something that interests you. And because if you do that, then you don't have the artificial constraints of sitting at a coffee bar with someone that you don't know, trying to make awkward conversation. You're all in it together. And even if you don't meet somebody, the prince of your charming of your dreams, at the, you know, while you're there, you're going to meet other people, even if they're women, and they have friends. You know, and so the constraints of the artificial are gone. I have nothing against speed dating and apps and online dating and all this other stuff. You need to do it all, but you can't bulk date. If you do too much of it, then you become so angry and jaded it shows.
How would you say that those apps and websites have, you know, affected the way that we date and interact nowadays?
Well, first of all, there's a bit of grim news for smart, wonderful women, all of us, in urban settings, because the ratio of men to women is, there are many more women than there are men. And even though you would think a large city like New York would have a lot of men, they do, but they're not available to you for a variety of reasons. So I will say this, although I'm not on Tinder and Swoon and all these, and just pick them up as two, I have been on them because I need to understand them, and I've watched other people use them. And I think it's kind of fun if you don't take it too seriously. But most of the men, some of these men on some of these sites will hook up two and three times in a night. They're having a great time. And the women who are in their beds wake up at midnight, the guy says, have a nice life. You know, I think it's fun if that's what you want. But I don't think that they're really good for finding people, because it's too easy to swipe left and reject.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without giving anybody a chance. And they're mostly visual, which means if you're not really good-looking or you're older or any of these kinds of things that might impede your abilities, nobody's going to get to know you, because it's like a smorgasbord, particularly for the men. So I don't
particularly
hate them.
Particularly for the men.
Yeah, because there are so many guys, they can just get a million willing partners, but they're not looking to settle down. And when they are, they're just generally not on dating apps. They're going somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think they're going?
Friends. Well, I think that, you know, I hate to say blind dates are the way to go, but lots of people meet through their friends and friends of friends, which brings me back to doing activities that you like. So somebody will say, have I got a guy for you? And I think that all of these things have their place. You know, it depends on what your personality is. I mean, when I was dating, I'm not a very outgoing person. I found it very painful, and I didn't want people had to get to know me. And I don't think you get to know somebody on dating apps, and maybe a little bit more on dating websites, but people advertise themselves as different than they are. I mean, somebody just told me
absolutely
a story. You know, like he says, I'm really fit, a tennis player, and I'm 32. And when the guy shows up, he's like 52, fat and bald, and has no job and wants you to pay for the coffee. And when you say to him, why did you lie? He will tell you the truth, which is, I just wanted to sit with a pretty girl. You know, I know you're not going to date
me,
but at least I had some fun. You know, then you leave, you the dater, the female dater, leave completely, you know, rejected and discouraged. This is why I don't love them. But I agree that you should do everything. Everything. Speed dating, progressive dinners, everything.
Is this what made you want to start Leather and Lace, advice.com?
No, I mean, Advice Sisters was my dating advice site that I did with my sister. We talked about weddings. We wrote books together. We wrote, our first book was Recruiting Love, Using the Business Skills You Have to Find the Love You Want, which basically said that a job search and a work search are very similar. It came out about the same time as that book called The Rules, and The Rules said all you have to do is wear lipstick to the gym and hike up your skirt. So people wanted that message. But that's not how you find a lasting love. By the way, the two girls who wrote that book are no longer partners and split up with their husbands because you can't live a lie forever.
Mm.
You know, but nobody wants to know that it's work, and it is. It really is. You have to really take the time to look back at your history so you don't repeat it and say, what do I think I have to offer and what liabilities do I have? For instance, if you're the one with five kids and not a job, it might be a little more difficult to entice a man, but you might find that that man is looking for an instant family because he didn't have one. So what's an asset or a liability to you may be different for someone else, and you really have to be aware of what you're offering, what you come to the table with. In this case, it is all about you. Know thyself before you go out there, and you'll make your dating life a lot more efficient and happier and faster.
Absolutely. And it sounds like you kind of have to know yourself, but then also kind of think about know that other person a little bit too and kind of think what they may look like, what their needs are, and what their wants are.
You really have to look at someone else. And here's the other thing, and I said this earlier, but if you're a young woman sort of caught between I'm out of college and I have a job and my biological clock is ticking, it's at that very moment that you really need to look at what you're doing. Because, and women panic, and then they say, well, I've waited this long. Why would I settle for this guy who wears white socks with black shoes? You know, things like that don't make a lot of sense. I mean, I had a friend who every Monday morning I'd call her and say, what was wrong with him? And she ditched every date. And she would say, oh, he didn't like action movies. And I'd say, but you can go with your girlfriends to action movies. No, I could never love a man who doesn't love action movies. Well, it took her a long time to find someone. She eventually did, but I think
like
she adjusted her thinking to get him. You know, I'm using it as an example. He wore white socks. I didn't like his laugh. You know, he ordered pasta for dinner. I mean, whatever excuse you could think of. After a while, women get very bitter and edgy about this stuff. And that's why you don't bulk date, by the way. Because by the time you get to that point, you're ready to rip anyone's head off who isn't perfect, even if you're not perfect, which you aren't.
By the time you've seen the third guy with white socks, you're just done dating.
You know,
done with the whole thing.
And I always say things like, well, you know, you can buy him dark socks once you're, like, married or dead, you know. Like, he'd be happy to accept that. Or, I mean, I don't know if you saw this, but someone on Facebook, about maybe 8 months ago, posted a photo of a teeny tiny little ring with a teeny tiny little diamond chip, so small it was minuscule, with the caption, would you marry this man if he gave you this ring? And 99.9% of them said, hell no, I wouldn't marry a man who gave you that cheesy ring. And I wrote back and said, ladies, you know, Bill Gates didn't start out rich. You know, what if
no.
This man becomes, you know, you marry someone for all the things they are, not what they can give you. A rich man can become poor or be, you know, seduced away by someone even younger and prettier than you. I mean, why would you marry a man because he can't buy you a big ring? But it was amazing to me how many women, and there were dozens of them, said, I would definitely not. You know,
oh,
they're
wow.
Not,
yeah, and they said definitely.
They said, I would never marry a man who gave me this ring. And I said, well, I didn't get any ring. I've been married 25 years. I mean, I think this it plays to the point that people's expectations, particularly women, is they're looking at the white dress and the big party, and I'm going to have a prince and he's going to shower me with stuff, and anybody's fortune can change. You better know who you're living with, you know?
Mm.
So... You know, I'm not saying that you should date people who disgust you, that bore you, that make you pay for all the transportation all the time, whatever it is. But you really have to look holistically and step back before you reject. Because they
like
can
that.
Reject
I
you,
absolutely
too.
I like that.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree. I wholeheartedly agree. So are you writing a book on this? Is this book coming?
I've written a number of books, and I'm actually working on a book on the lives of rock and roll roadies right now, band crew, not a dating book, but I've written a number of them. I don't know that the world really needs another dating book. There are so many of them out there, and most of them, frankly, just give you a cheap fix. It's like a sugar rush. It sounds really great on paper, and you get all excited, and the minute you close the cover, you feel, you know, exhausted, like, I can't do this. So it sounded good, but it really didn't work. I mean, I don't think that anybody needs another dating book. I mean, the one that I wrote for Adam's Media, I don't know if it's in print anymore. It was the Everything Dating Book, second edition. And they asked me to write it for older people, people who might not have been dating since World War II. you know, and I tried to do that. But in the end, most people, unless they've been living under a rock or in a cave like Rip Van Winkle, understand the basics of dating and where you can find someone. The key is to personalize it to you, and no book can tell you that. Only you can, and it requires sitting in a sensory deprivation tank by yourself or some quiet place and really writing it down. It's work, but if you don't do the front work, it's like writing a resume. You're not going to get a job without one most times. You need to do the work up front, then go out and date, and then dating will be effective. Otherwise, you're flailing around and coming back from yet another date, closing the door, kicking off your stilettos and saying, oh, my God, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? We don't want people to do that. You don't have to date a lot. You have to date smart. You have to date targeted. And to do that, you need to do all the things that we're discussing. Then go out wherever you want to go and date.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Allison. That was wonderful. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us and for your wonderful nuggets of wisdom and insight. And after 25 years of marriage, I know that you absolutely have thousands more.
Yeah, I kind of do, but it's been fun talking to you, and I hope I'll be helpful to the people who listen to this and that they take it seriously.
Absolutely. And for more advice from Allison, you can visit advicesisters.com as well as leatherandlaceadvice.com. And those links will be on the page directly below the audio. Thank you so very much for listening in, and see you soon.
Bye.